Okay, girls, today I'm giving you the inside scoop on my favorite place to save this spring. At Ross, it's the spot to get everything you need at prices you'll love. Because when you find brand names for 20 to 60% off other retailers' prices, you'll definitely be finding your next favorite outfit and more. Trust me, you don't want to miss out on these deals on your favorite dresses and tops. And at this price, you might as well throw in a new purse or pair of shoes too. But Ross isn't just about savings, they're about giving back. This year, Ross and their customers raised over $4.1 million to support the Boys and Girls Club and local youth programs to help kids and families thrive. Seriously, just visit your local Ross and see for yourself, because I know you like to keep your closet full and your costs low. So what are you waiting for? Say yes for less at your local Ross.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Welcome to the Dynasty Dugout Show, a podcast covering all things minor league baseball. Get a front row seat to the action with everything you need to know about the future stars of Major League Baseball. And now, here's your host, Chris Clegg.
Good morning, and welcome to another edition of the Dynasty Dugout Show. Today is March 25th. It's a Monday, and it is regular season week. We are just a couple of days away from a full slate of opening day action on Thursday, and that is very, very exciting. I am looking forward to that. We still have a couple more farm systems to break down, so we're going to go ahead and do that. We're going to jump right in today with the Chicago White Sox farm system. As always, be sure to check out the write-ups on the site. You can go to thedynastydugout.com, or you can check the description below to see the link to the full White Sox write-up. You know, the system has gotten better. It certainly was not all that great, but several trades have made the system look a lot better, especially after the Dylan Cease trade, in which they acquired Drew Thorpe, Hirary Arte, and Samuel Zavala. Those are three of the top 10 prospects in this system. So that's obviously encouraging to see them make that move to replenish the farm system, even though moving Dylan Cease is rather tough. But let's get right into the action, starting with Colson Montgomery, the top prospect in this system. He was the 22nd overall pick in 2021 draft. He certainly has not lived up to the hype that many thought, but he's still been really, really good. Last year, slashed just 244, 400, 427, but it was a small sample as he dealt with injuries. He did have an impressive Arizona Fall League and really stood out to me. I look at Colson Montgomery. He's highly athletic. We're talking about somebody that was highly recruited basketball player in high school. He was going to go to Indiana for basketball and baseball, and that speaks volume about the athleticism here and the kind of player we're looking at. I know some people look at him and say he's moving to third base. That's not the case at all with Colson Montgomery. When you look at this profile, I think Montgomery is somebody that certainly can play shortstop due to the athleticism. Doesn't matter that he's bigger. I mean, he's probably 6'4" now. He's listed 6'3", but he's 6'4". He's 205 list, but this is a kid that moves really well. He's got a good glove. And when I interviewed him in the fall league, I asked him what was something that he was hoping to do this coming season. And he said, prove to everybody that he could be a shortstop long term. I believe he's going to do exactly that. He moves very well. He's got a good glove. He can hit for power. He makes a lot of contact. No, he's not going to give you much speed for fantasy purposes, but this is the kind of profile that makes a ton of contact, that end zone contact rates were very good. There is potential plus power in the profile with Colson Montgomery. So you're looking at a shortstop that, you know, everybody comped him to Corey Seager coming out of high school when he was drafted. I'm not going there because Corey Seager is one of the best fantasy shortstops in the game. But this is a very solid player, high hit tool, powerful shortstop that I think could provide plenty of fantasy value. We're looking at a potential 280 type hitter. He may get on base at a high clip, and I think he can hit 25 home runs, probably steal you a couple bags. I'm suggesting buying in on Colson Montgomery because it seems like the perceived cost is down a little bit with him. So I would buy in if you could. Next in the system is Brian Ramos, who I am very infatuated with what Ramos can do. He has been really solid. He looked impressive in the Arizona Fall League 2 when I saw him. This is the kind of profile that you just watch him and he's like, all right. Then you watch him in person, it's like, okay, this guy is significantly bigger than he looks. He's just jacked. I mean, he's listed 6'2", 225, but this is a very, you know, good athlete, very strong, hits for power. We're looking at a very solid exit velocity skill set with respectable contact rates too. You know, Ramos ended the year very strong last year. He missed some time, but ultimately when he was in AA, he slashed 271, 369, 457. He had 14 homers. He struck out just 22% of the time, putting up some decent contact rates. The power, as I mentioned, was there. He had a 106-mile-an-hour, 9th percentile exit velocity. Very good power. You know, ultimately, the monthly splits were climbing. Like, he was improving as the season went on. And then he was really good again in the Arizona Fall League. So the biggest hurdle, in my opinion, is can he hit right-handed pitching? He mashed lefties, but against righties last year, hit 219, 316, 360. One, you know, ultimately, I think that he is a dynasty buy because I don't think most have him in the top 100, and he's firmly in my top 100, a top 75 type prospect. I really like Brian Ramos a lot. I would buy him wherever you can. Third baseman, Brian Ramos. Go over to a couple pitchers here. We have Drew Thorpe, new to the system, and Noah Schultz, and we'll even talk about Jairo Iriarte as well. Let's talk about Drew Thorpe first. A newcomer to the system. Thorpe arguably had the best minor league season of any pitcher in baseball last year. He was absolutely incredible. He actually got better as he moved up levels. You know, this is an arm that people love to hate on because honestly, most people that hate on him haven't actually watched Drew Thorpe pitch. They just hear that his fastball is not very good. And they're like, oh, he's not going to perform in the majors. And it's really funny because I think that ultimately this has happened because the last few like really nasty changeup guys have come up and struggled initially. You know, Thorpe has a really good changeup. It's probably a 70 grade changeup, but he also has a really good breaking ball too. So it's not like, in my opinion, the Gavin Stone case where Stone doesn't have a good breaking ball to go to. Stone has a great changeup, but ultimately the breaking ball is not there for Stone. For Thorpe, you know, the fastball does lag behind. It's 91 to 93. You know, it was higher last year than it was in college, which is good, but it does play up due to Thorpe's command. The changeup, as I mentioned, is probably one of the better changeups in the minors, and it is his best pitch. Very good offering there. His slider gets a ton of whiffs too, and he will mix a cutter and curveball on occasion. So if you're listening to this and you think that Drew Thorpe can't succeed because somebody told you his fastball wasn't good, I would advise against that because at the end of the day, Thorpe has good secondaries to go to outside of the changeup. His slider is a whiff pitch. He has the cutter and curveball that he can go to. It is plus command and control. He's very efficient. He pitches deep into games. He averaged over 6 innings per start last year. Struck out 182 batters over 139 innings. Throws strikes at a 65% clip, which is well above average. You know, Thorpe just gets the job done. He has a good feel for all pitches. And if you look at Thorpe, you know, you may look at the numbers and have high expectations. He's not going to be an ace. He's probably not going to be a number two, but I do think there is a solid mid-rotation starter here for Drew Thorpe. And I know people have kind of soured on that, which is very interesting, but I am still in on Drew Thorpe, and I like the move because now he has a chance to contribute pretty much immediately. Let's talk Noah Schultz, who is kind of the opposite. He's a 6'9", 220 lefty, a massive frame, 20 years old. You know, if you're looking at pure ceiling, I think Noah Schultz might be the top guy in this system. You know, he has high-end SP upside that, you know, it's lacking from Drew Thorpe. But that does not mean that, you know, Thorpe's not good. It doesn't mean that Schultz is, you're going to struggle, but just because he has the high upside. But at the end of the day, I think that Noah Schultz, if he proves health, will soar up boards. And that is my biggest question with Schultz, is can he handle a starter's workload and can he stay healthy? I think those are the major questions that I need answered. And that's why I have Drew Thorpe ahead of him. And I got that question a good bit when Thorpe was traded over, like, why was Thorpe ahead? And well, ultimately, that's it. I'm not confident in the fact that he can stay healthy yet. It was a small sample, 27 innings in A-ball last year, but the arsenal looked really good. He threw strikes at a league average clip. He had 6 walks and 38 strikeouts. You know, I think that this will be a case where Schultz is likely being babied a bit, like they're going to slow play him and probably take it very cautiously because of the injury concerns. And the fact that he's only pitched 4 innings once as a professional. He averaged 47 pitches over his 9 outings last year. So I think this is going to be a case with dynasty managers that you need to practice patience. I think you can dream of a top of rotation type arm here with Thorpe. It's a mid to upper 90s fastball. It's a low 80s slider and a very promising changeup. All those come from a very tough angle, which make it tough for hitters to pick up on. You know, I think the command actually looked pretty solid overall last year. I mean, it's better than I expected from somebody his size. At the end of the day, there is still a long ways to go. But with Noah Schultz, the upside is there. I am very excited to see what he can do. As is this next guy, Jairo Iriarte, who likely is in the rotation pretty soon. Maybe he's a bullpen guy for them. But I think that Iriarte could be a really fun starter in Chicago. Now, especially that you look at upside. Well, Iriarte has as much upside as anybody in the White Sox system at this point. Much like Noah Schultz, is a very high upside arm. Iriarte kind of popped out of nowhere last year with big stuff. You know, the fastball consistently set 96 to 97. Has a ton of riding action. It's a low arm slot. It gets run, gets a ton of whiffs on his pitches. The slider is devastating. It has a ton of sweep, but also some downward action. It sits in the mid-80s, throws it to lefties and righties. It is a go-to swing and miss pitch for Iriarte, and his changeup. It sits 90 miles an hour with fade. It tunnels well off the fastball before taking late dive. Changeup misses bats much like both the fastball and the slider. But at the end of the day, he generates a ton of ground balls when contact is made. The stuff is electric. It is a pretty violent delivery. And that's kind of the concern on him. Is the delivery too violent? And maybe so. We shall see. But Iriarte looked to be very good as a starter last year. We'll see if that sustains in the White Sox org, which I am excited to see what he can do now with the White Sox. But what about Nick Nastrini, player who probably should be in the White Sox rotation, and we should know pretty soon, but it seems possible that he is in the rotation to start the year. He came over in the Lance Lynn deal last trade deadline last July. He was a former fourth rounder out of UCLA and has been very successful in the higher levels of the minors. Has 144 innings across AA and AAA. And has been rather successful. Struck out 181 batters over that stretch. The ERAs looked good. The walk rate has kind of been the question. He's walked too many batters at times, but at the end of the day, it's worked. He's not at a range where it's like, oh crap, this is highly concerning. Nastrini has been actually in a range that I think he can live in, especially considering the ABS and AAA last year, which probably inflated that. And 11% was actually pretty respectable. So with Nastrini, you're getting a mid-90s fastball, touches 97 on occasion with ride. He throws two breaking balls. I think the changeup probably lags behind a little bit. But ultimately, the arsenal is solid. He's looked really good this spring. He has thrown strikes at, you know, clips that have been inconsistent. Some starts have been, okay, like this guy looks like he's got the command and control. And then other starts, it just is not there at all. I think the Dodgers, you know, may regret this trade because Lance Lynn did not work out for them at all. And Joe Kelly was, he was fine. But Nick Nastrini looks to be a starter that they can handle for the long term. He's a 6'3", 215-pound guy, right-handed pitcher. And I think Nastrini gets his shot. Nastrini's going to get his chance to pitch in the big leagues this year. And I think he will perform, which I am very excited to see what he will do. But let's talk about a couple of bats. Samuel Zavala, who came over in the Dylan Cease trade, he's kind of a polarizing player in the eyes of the industry. When you look at Zavala, it's kind of tools for days. But those tools have not materialized yet because Zavala has not made enough contact. It's an interesting operation with the swing. And I think that there are questions about how it plays. You know, can his mechanics work? And can he get it to work with the contact rates that he has put up? At the end of the day, I think that question still needs to be answered. But Zavala signed for $1.2 million back in 2021. He spent most of the year last year in single-A Lake Elsinore before bumping to high Fort Wayne for the final 2 weeks. And across 515 plate appearances last year, he put up an interesting slash, 243, 391, 406, with 14 homers and 21 stolen bases. He walked over 18% of the time, which is interesting, but he also struck out 27% of the time. The contact rates were not great, which is my biggest concern. It was a zone contact rate of 70%. That was zone. That was not overall. Zone contact rate for Zavala of 70% and an overall rate of 67%. The good news is that Zavala does not chase all that often out of the zone. It was one of the lower chase rates in the minors at just 14%. And he does show good speed and instincts on the base pass. Stole 21 last year, caught just 7 times. If the contact does improve, I think this could be a fun 20 home run, 20 stolen base kind of player. He's going to get on base at a high clip, as we mentioned, due to the walk rates. And at the end of the day, he is athletic enough to steal you bags. But the tough thing for me is the batted ball profile. It's 47% fly ball rate last year, and it's 15% line drive rate. The lack of line drives induced a low BABIP, and therefore getting lower batting averages. So Zavala is a weird profile. He's young. I still think there is plenty of time for him to figure this out. But right now, I'm a little bit concerned. It's a fun upside shot with Sammy Zavala, but know that it's that. It's an upside shot. I don't think he's a top 50 prospect. A lot of people think he's a top 50 guy. I don't think he's a top 100 prospect until he proves a little more. So this will be a pretty telling year, even though he is younger. I'm excited to see what he can do. Edgar Caro, catcher, came over in the trade with Lucas Giolito and Ronaldo Lopez in July last year as they were traded to the Angels. And obviously, that didn't work out well for the Angels either, as sadly, a lot of things don't work out for the Angels. But he's a switch hitting backstop. He's moved quickly. He spent his age 20 season as a double-A catcher in the Southern League, which was a tough league to hit in. Slash 255, 380, 351. He walked nearly as much as he struck out. 72 walks to 76 strikeouts for Caro. Pretty interesting splits, righty-lefty splits. And at the end of the day, I look at Caro, and he was very hot to begin the year. He was very hot to end the year. But in the middle, there were some struggles. Also, once the tacky ball at the Southern League that we saw Caro kind of make improvements, as several guys did. As a right-handed hitter, Caro slashed an incredible 340, 454, 443, but just one home run. And last year, or 2 years ago in single A, that number was actually 275, 426, 468. The left-handed production kind of took a dip. In 2022, 326, 438, 533 with 14 home runs. That dropped in 2023 to 221, 351, 313 with 6 home runs. So the interesting thing with Caro is, as a lefty, all right, so let's look at the switch hitter. Again, as a lefty, he struggled in double A. My hypothesis is that we saw those struggles due to the tacky ball. All right, so against a right-handed pitcher as a lefty, players were getting much more ride, obviously, on the fastball. They were also getting more horizontal movement as well. So changeups were harder to hit for lefties, and right-handers were able to throw it more. Right-handed pitchers were able to throw those and get more whiffs. Churio really struggled against changeups until the tacky ball left. Then we see Caro make those improvements afterwards. So my hypothesis is that he actually is going to be okay. It's not that big of a deal that he did struggle in AA as a 20-year-old. I think the more impressive thing that he was catching as a 20-year-old in AA. So I'm pretty interested in Edgar Caro as a decent buy in a dynasty league, knowing that there's a pretty strong potential this guy bounces back and is somebody that, you know, I really want on my team, in my farm system, on my dynasty roster. So this is now where the system kind of takes a little bit of a drop off. This was a pretty talented group at the top. A lot of them acquired via trade. And now we see a bit of a drop. They did trade Christian Mana, who I like. They traded him to Arizona. So this range kind of took a hit as well. But George Wolcow is my next guy in the system that I really like. Wolcow was a draftee last year, overslot guy in the 7th round, South Carolina commit. Really hoping to get him on campus as a Gamecock, but it's all good. He received a $1 million signing bonus, which is awesome for George and very exciting. He was one of the youngest players in the draft class because he reclassified. He was actually supposed to be part of the 2024 class, reclassified to last summer, and it paid off. He got his meal early, which is awesome. He is a big 6'7" outfielder, lefty bat, really good stuff. I think that Wolcow was going to be a first rounder if he had let it play out into 2024, which was a lot of fun. So it's all good. Wolcow is probably somebody that pops off this year. I think there's a lot of, you know, raw talent and upside here. And when you look at somebody to take shots on in a dynasty league, Wolcow is the type of player to do so. He's young, he's physical, he's athletic. At the end of the day, I think this player could really pop off. And at the draft cost in FYPD, or maybe even you pick him up off the wire, he's not going to cost you much. And I think there's a decent chance that you get a good return on investment with Wolcow. So he's one that I am looking to invest in if I can. He is a high upside type player, as is these next couple. Grant Taylor is an arm that I really like, who there's not a lot of talk about because, honestly, Grant Taylor's been hurt most of his career. LSU arm. Taylor has really big stuff, and, you know, I didn't recognize that at first. I have come around much more to it. Taylor had pitched a total of 31 innings at LSU before the injury. He pitched 21 innings on the Cape in summer of 2022 and was very, very good. Grant Taylor has all the stuff in the world to be a really successful arm. And I think that we see that ultimately with Taylor once he gets healthy. I think there's a chance that he could be the one that everybody talks about. I talk about Ty Floyd a lot out of LSU. But I look at Grant Taylor and I'm like, okay, I think Grant Taylor is probably flying way too far in the radar and should be talked about more because the stuff here is really, really good. I think that if you want to take a shot on an upside arm, it's Grant Taylor. That's where I'd be throwing my darts if I could, because I think Taylor is still being massively undervalued. I think that he's someone that pops up pretty substantially this year. And if you go on Jeff Potts' Twitter, Jeff Potts BA, he has some good footage from the Cape of Grant Taylor, of him looking very good. And Jeff gave me some pretty rave reviews on Taylor as well from what he saw. You're looking at a big fastball. I mean, it sits, you know, low to mid-90s, but a lot of ride on it. Good horizontal movement as well. It is a 12-6 type curveball with, you know, a lot of break, a lot of spin, you know, a lot of drop as well. He'll throw a slider, he'll throw a cutter, he'll throw a changeup. You know, Grant Taylor, when healthy, is a guy that's, you know, really worth investing in. If you go find that video on Jeff's Twitter, you'll see, you know, him getting a ton of ugly swings. Taylor might be a guy that I am heavily investing in the hopes that he gets healthy and can really pop off. So Grant Taylor's one to watch out for sure. Another upside play is Eduardo Herrera, an international signee from this year, who is very physical, big power bat. You know, with Herrera, when I look at this profile, I think there's still a lot of unknowns with Eduardo Herrera, but I think Herrera does have a lot to offer, especially from the standpoint of power. We'll get some looks at him at the DSL this summer. He may be somebody that flies up boards, and I would kind of be ready for it. I think Herrera is fairly underrated. He was young for the signee class. Broad shoulders, thick neck, you know, big lower half. It's a traits you want to see in a big power bat. He's already 6'2", 215. And for a 17-year-old, that's pretty impressive. But he still shows to be a good athlete despite that. So Herrera is somebody that I do want to invest in pretty early if I can, if it's a deeper dynasty league. Certainly taking a shot on Eduardo Herrera. Look at a couple other names. Peyton Pallette. He is somebody that I think could develop into a better arm. I've seen him live a couple of times. He was a first-round guy his last year at Arkansas. But he had TJ, unfortunately, in his draft season before it even started. White Sox still gave him second-round value, which shows a lot of how they view him. Made his pro debut in 2023. Pitched just 72 innings, about a 4.13 ERA. He missed plenty of bats, struck out 78 across those 72 innings, but the walk rate was a little concerning. He walked 41 batters. That'll be the key for him, throwing strikes. You know, you give him another year coming back from TJ. 2024 will be a prove-it year for Peyton Pallette, which I'm excited to see. He's a fun name. I'll just be honest, I am pretty out on Jake Eater. Maybe he does bounce back this year, but he was not good at all in the AFL. Sadly, just did not look the part. I know he was coming back from TJ last year. He was very good at Miami before the trade and before the injury. But to me, Eater's fastball has always been a question. It's not a great fastball. He has to rely on the slider, which is a good pitch. But, you know, at the end of the day, I just don't think the slider, I mean, the fastball is very good. It's low 90s with pretty meh shape. I don't know. Eater's going to have to show me a lot this year for me to get back in on him. But at the moment, I'm actually fairly out. Pitcher that I do like is Jonathan Cannon. Big righty. Doesn't miss a lot of bats. He's a sinker type, but he's very efficient on the mound. He is someone that I like a decent bit that I think could further his development. He looks like he has a starter's workhorse frame. He throws strikes. He pounds the zone. So for me, when I look at a player or pitcher like Jonathan Cannon, yeah, he's somebody that I certainly am interested in investing in. A couple other names real quick before we get out of here. You have Jose Rodriguez, second baseman, and Wilfred Veras, a third baseman. Both these guys are fairly interesting. I think Rodriguez has some intrigue. He made his debut last year, just one game, cup of coffee, which is, you know, whatever. But Rodriguez did spend the majority of the year in AA. The tacky ball was working kind of against him. The strikeout rate jumped significantly, 15% K rate for his career before, 23% last year in AA. It did come back down after his promotion to AAA. So I think that this is a case where Rodriguez potentially struggled due to the tacky ball. You know, you saw his results in AAA, not the best. He doesn't hit the ball all that hard. But Rodriguez does have some sneaky speed. He can steal you bases. Stole 31 last year, had 21 homers. I think that Rodriguez potentially has a 15 homer, 30 stolen base type profile, which could be very useful. Contact skills are all right. I think that they improved once he got away from the tacky ball. So when you look at Rodriguez, I think there's an interesting chance that he could become something. As is Wilfred Veras, who had 17 homers and 24 stolen bases last year. As a 20-year-old between high A and double A, he impressed me in my looks with him. He had some solid slugging percentage, but you know, there was some struggles with plate discipline. He doesn't walk all that much. There's a good athlete, though, in the frame. 6'2", 180. He is a solid athlete. He moves well. It's a powerful stroke with the bat. You know, Veras, I think the defense might be the biggest question of where he plays. But there's solid power. There's a decent hit tool. And ultimately, a pretty good athlete. So, Veras was pretty young. 20-year-old in high A and double A last year. So, I think this is somebody to watch out for that can continue to move up rankings. We'd be remiss if we didn't talk about Javier Mogollon, M-O-G-O-L-L-O-N, who may be somebody that pops up and breaks out pretty substantially this year. You know, the DSL lines, you kind of take them with a grain of salt, so you don't want to get too excited about them, but he was very impressive. 199 plate appearances. He hit 315, 417, 582 with 10 homers, 11 stolen bases, 27 walks to 28 strikeouts. Mogollon is rather impressive when it comes to batted ball distribution too. A lot of line drives, healthy fly balls. He pulls the ball at a high rate. And I think that at the end of the day, we just need to know a little more about him. He is a smaller listed guy, 5'8", 160 for Javier Mogollon. I think this is kind of an upside play in a dynasty league. If you want to take a shot on Javier Mogollon, and maybe it pays off. We have not talked about Jacob Gonzalez, I realize. I accidentally skipped him. First rounder last year out of Ole Miss, 3-year starting shortstop. Very good college career. But ultimately, his draft year was not quite as good as his sophomore year and his freshman years. 2021, his freshman year, he was an All-American. So, I don't know. I'm a bit torn on the Jacob Gonzalez profile. Yeah, I think that this is someone that has shown that he can hit at a high collegiate level. He's not going to steal you bases at all, so take that into account for fantasy. I think the power is still a big question mark, and I think that he's certainly not shortstop. He's going to probably play second base long term, but Jacob Gonzalez will need to show more. He has not gotten into the type of power that I like to see. The contact skills were, I mean, he got 137 single A plate appearances, hit just 207, 328, 261 with one home run. I know it's a small sample, not going to put a lot of stock into it. I think the swing has had questions and whether the swing can play. And so far, the results have not looked great. So, one to watch there with Jacob Gonzalez. First rounder last year, very high pick. Let's close out the show with an interesting guy who I like, Brooks Baldwin. I know Nate Handy is very high on Brooks Baldwin. He was a 12th rounder in 2022 out of UNC Wilmington, but has been rather good. He has continued to produce and perform. He's taken steps forward. In 2023, put up an impressive 327, 375, 495 slash line. You know, this was after he got promoted. He had 15 homers, but five of them after promotion. Stole 22 bags last year. The line drive rate continued to improve all year. He's really versatile. Played mostly third base, but Baldwin did play center field, left field, second, third, now, and shortstop. So, you know, I mean, this is an interesting profile to watch with Brooks Baldwin, 6'2", 175 frame. He is a solid hitter from the left side. Not as good from the right side, but you still, it's solid approach. across the board. Some solid home run potential. He can steal you bases. I think Baldwin might be a really solid utility type player that nobody's really talking about. So we'll close out the show here with Brooks Baldwin of the Chicago White Sox. And this has been a lot of fun to break the White Sox system down. Thank you for joining us. Be sure to check out the DynastyDugout.com if you enjoy the show. Check out more for more content. And be sure to subscribe to support the work that I'm doing. I appreciate each of you. Share kindness with one another on this fine Monday as we get ready for the MLB regular season. Take care.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.